Welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, your dose of empowerment and the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system. My name is Lindsay, affectionately known as Ms. Black.
And I'm Hottie, Mr. Broussard, and I'm feeling recovered.
Woo! Recovered.
Yes, recovered.
Okay, let's just slide into the updates, okay? Well, explain to us why you're feeling recovered.
Yeah, so I'm back from Jamaica.
Jamaica.
Irie. Yeah, so I didn't get to tell you, but yes, I did. You were actually taking care of me, basically, virtually. I was sick. I got sick the last day of Jamaica. It was terrible. I got a fever, and then I thought I was, like, almost better, and then I flew back to the States, flew to Houston, was like, okay, like, I'm good, I'm gonna fly to D.C. or Baltimore, and I'll be Gucci. Got back, my fever peaked at, like, 105.
That's insane.
And thank God for Lindsay, because every step of the way she was checking on me, and she was like, you need to go to the hospital, and I didn't know, so funny enough, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I didn't know that when your fever hit 105, you're like supposed to go to the hospital.
You thought I was just saying that for fun?
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. All right. Great. You thought I was just saying it? Like, but, no. Stupid.
So thank God it came down.
Thank God.
Because I think it came back down. It came down to like 101. And you were like, okay, like good.
Well, it's okay, down. It's safe.
Yeah. But yeah, it hit 105. I definitely should have gone to the hospital. But I'm feeling much better. I don't know what it was.
Thank God.
My roommate was definitely like, oh, you got coronavirus. And I was like, please, let's not play with me like that.
Right.
But yeah, I feel great. I'm so happy that this week I'm going to be an actual human being. I left work so many times last week.
No.
And you kept telling me not to go to work, which was
right. Great, you don't listen to me.
I didn't have to. And then I came home, but then I didn't go to work the next day.
Good.
So I did like we need two, take care of three. Ourselves. Yes. Yeah. Yes, we do. Point blank period. But how are you?
I'm good. I feel like I'm relaxed. I had a second winter break. Oh, what does that mean? So,
yes.
You know, we have winter break during like the actual Christmas holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a week of a winter break in February. This is only the second year we've done this, but I'm at a charter school and we mock our public school system and they have like a second winter break. I think that they call it like an intermission period. And there are some schools that like pull like their bottom 10% in the class and like some teachers are like paid extra to like tutor them and skills they don't know or like standardized testing stuff. But we don't do all that. We just get another break. So it was nice to have a break. What I also want to like shout out all the people that have been like avid listeners at this point. I know we've been a few episodes in, but all the people who have sent me articles to read or sent me videos to watch or research papers to read about education or things in education. Shout out to y'all because y'all are really listening. And like, this
That's what we wanted.
We wanted this like to provide a space for discourse.
And exactly.
It'd be people I haven't talked to in months.
Right.
Special shout out to Justin, my best friend. That's my guy.
Yeah.
Because he's listening and we've been having like so many conversations and I don't even be having to bring it up. But we've been having so many conversations about different pieces of education and like how this listening has made him been really reflective about his experience in education and how he's making connections with it now.
Wow.
So that's dope.
It really is. And I do have to say, because I meant to send you that message too. I got to give a shout out to my friend Lisa, who's all the way in Harry,
ooh,
France. She actually was just, she messaged me and she was while I was in Jamaica. And just kind of was like, Jahad, thank you so much for this platform. Like, I've done a lot of reflecting. And she was like, thank you, because now I'm actually going to be able to get fit because she listens to it while she runs. So,
oh, nice.
Right. So I'm like, this is just so amazing to be able to have yet another way to have conversations with a friend mm-hmm. who's all the way abroad.
Right.
But still, like, checking in on me and listening and supporting me. So shout out to you, Lisa.
Yes.
And yes, thank you so to all of our supporters. And please continue to listen. Spread the word.
Cut the noise. Cut the noise. Cut the noise. If you're not tuning in to Kicking It with Key, then you are surely missing out. Key is a YouTuber, self-care enthusiast, an educator, hey, a queen of unboxing, and a lupus survivor. And Key is also one of my really good friends. Kicking It with Key focuses on sharing personal journeys to light the pathway for others through tips and hacks for everyday struggles. If you're interested in cutting the noise and living your very best life, tune in every other Sunday at 7 p.m. on YouTube. You can find Key on YouTube at Kian Cole. Let me spell it out for you. K-I-A-N-A-C-O-L-E. You can also find Kicking It with Key on Instagram at Kicking It with Key _. I'm going to spell that out for you too. K-I-C-K-I-N-I-T-W-I-T-H-K-I_. Join Key so you can also live your very best life.
So this section is called Two Sets of Notes. This is our section where we discuss current events with the teacher's lens. So Lens, I don't know if you've ever driven down H Street and passed like that golf course. Do you know what it's called?
No, and it seems very, very random, but I have seen it.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so I've always wondered. And so I had read this article that was giving me different, basically just like different tidbits of how you can like kind of spruce up Black History Month and not always make it about like the, you know, how people are always talking about Malcolm X.
Exactly. We don't really talk about Malcolm X, but that's Rosa Parks, that's Martin Luther King.
Of course, I go straight there.
Right.
But yeah, so I actually looked up this app, and on this app, it literally tells you about different historical landmarks in the area, like wherever you're at.
That's dope.
And it's an app called Clio. And so I looked up that golf course because I had always wondered. I was like, there has to be some type of purpose, some type of context why there's this random golf course. And there is. It's actually called Langston Golf Course. And it was named after John Mercer Langston, who is the first African-American from Virginia to be elected to Congress.
Oh, I didn't know that. I really did not know that.
Yeah. And actually, it was the second golf course in D.C. to be racially desegregated.
Ooh.
And so I found all this out by way of this app called Clio. And then, so this app, but I think that you also could use it for like a walking tour so that you can be, and I think one of the names of the tours is actually the Washington, D.C. tour of the Shaw and LaJoie Park neighborhood. You can literally take a walking tour and it gives you all the different facts about the different historical contexts, different historical monuments and things that are in that neighborhood. But regardless of where you're at, you can use it like throughout the country.
And that is so important, especially like being a teacher. Like, first, getting kids to be tech savvy. Tech literacy is super important.
It is.
You can use your phone
for
something besides texting and being on TikTok. And you don't have to pay, that's an experience that you don't have to pay anybody for. And with this influx of non-Black people into Chocolate City, like, being able to access, like, Black history on your phone, like, that's just very important.
It really is. And so, I definitely was poking around just because I was really curious to know like what else is going on in the city. But I just think there just were so many different things. But yeah, so that's our section of two sets of notes for this week.
And now we will slide into terminology time. Now our term for our phrase, excuse me, for this week is restorative justice. Now, you may have heard this before. It is kind of a buzzword, but it actually is really important when it's implemented correctly. So it's a new discipline system. And I use that term very loosely because the purpose of the system is not to discipline, but more so to produce a culture of accountability. But I'm saying discipline system because I know when we were in school, we saw it as a discipline system. And so I'm trying to make connections to what you may already know. In summary, restorative justice helps a student to own what he or she did, then make it right for those that were hurt or affected by it, and involve the community in helping both the victim and the offender move forward. Restorative justice acknowledges that those who actually did something to the class also need to do healing and also were probably harmed. It's cool because you're teaching kids to be reflective. You're teaching them to be introspective. And there's like a series of questions. There's a lot of questioning instead of assumptions. Because I feel like when we were younger, something bad would happen. A teacher would assume why we did it. Then we get in trouble.
Right.
But now if a kid does something, if they get into a fight, I'm literally sitting you down like, okay, is everything okay? What happened? How did it happen? And then once we get into the actual introspective piece, it's like, who did your actions actually hurt? And how do you feel about it now, knowing that it hurt them? And then how can you fix it? And one extra added piece that I never really saw us do, I think there were like attempts with like conflict resolution, mm-hmm. but we do things like have restorative circles. And so the student who is technically the perpetrator that did something wrong mm-hmm. will probably be sent out of the classroom to have a conversation with a trusted adult. Some schools have behavior specialists where they can lead these conversations. And they're able to reflect on what they did and come back to the class, potentially ready to apologize. But when we have the circle, it's like all the students in the class or everyone who was impacted gets to share their opinion on what happened or how they felt. And a lot of times, just allowing the kids to have this space to talk, one, they feel safe because mm-hmm. nobody's going to talk if they don't feel safe in the space. And they also feel seen or they feel heard. They have the option to say something or not to say something because you don't always have to speak and you don't always have to be ready to speak after something happens. But the best part is that what usually happens is that kids formulate a resolution to it.
Right.
So it takes more time, but it's less talking that teachers have to do, less dictating. Mm-hmm. And when the kids create their own meaning and their own way to resolve the issue, I think it's much easier for the perpetrator to accept the wrong when they hear, oh, my peers, they're expressing that they're mad at me, but they're also supporting me and finding a solution. And so it then just builds community, which is really dope. Restorative justice was the term, the phrase of this episode. There are plenty of other ways to demonstrate restorative justice. It's definitely a big movement. So I will push everybody to do some more research into it. So now we're moving into the concept development portion, which is where we're actually going to get into the meat of the content for today. And we're talking about celebrating Black History Month in schools.
Yes.
Because Black History Month is officially over. Mm-hmm. Shout out to all of us.
Yes.
And shout out to that extra day because it was a leap year. So we have the 29th.
Four years.
Just want to give people some background on Black History Month for those that just don't know, or you may have known, you know some parts of it. So Black History Month really started as Negro History Week. It was enacted by Carter G. Woodson in 1926, and it was the second week of February because that correlated with President Lincoln's birthday and Frederick Douglass's birthday, which are both holidays that Black people have historically celebrated. Then in 1969 was when Black History Month was first proposed by Black students at Kent State University in Ohio, and they rolled it out at their university. And then by 1976, it was officially recognized by the government. So we have been honoring Black History and celebrating Black History Month officially since 1976, which is relatively recent, y'all. But that's cool, you know, progress.
Yeah, and that's really dope that this was even founded by students, literally at a university. Yeah. They were like, yeah, you know what? Not just a week. Like, thank you, Carter G. Woodson. Mm-hmm. But like, we need a whole month.
Yeah.
And now I know that we talk about all the time about how a month is not even long enough. And we need to be practicing and teaching all of these things on a yearly basis.
All the time.
So yeah, I just had to say that. That was important.
I think that another piece of it is that talking about what it looks like in schools mm-hmm. and how Black History Month is, you know, it's kind of difficult for me, but it's mandated, right? Like there's like for my school and this my previous school, there's like a culture committee and it's like schools know we're supposed to be honoring this month. And mm-hmm. We honor Hispanic Heritage Month, Women's Month, no bullying in October. We wear a lot of orange. And so February just happens to be Black History Month. Mm-hmm. And so it's mandated, but I can see how, like, there's just no universal across, like, education of what it's supposed to look like.
Right.
So I know parents tend to have a lot of autonomy over how. Did I say parents?
Yeah.
I'm going to say teachers.
Okay.
Teachers. Parents too. But teachers tend to have a lot of autonomy over how they actually celebrate Black History Month in school, which I think is good. But sometimes I think that we lack or we miss some pieces with that.
Right.
For example, mm-hmm. I know like at my school, we would do a Blacks and Wax Museum, right? So ideally, you're supposed to spend the whole month with our homeroom, and we choose a topic. So I think last year I chose Black Inventors. And so that whole month of February, we highlighted a different inventor. So, I think his name was Lonnie something, but he invented the Super Soaker. We talked about peanut butter being invented by Black people. Mm-hmm. So all the kids got to choose a different person and they got to research about it. We got to have some discourse about each of these people. And then we had the Blacks and Wax Museum. And so our room turned into a museum exhibit, and kids came and they came dressed as their inventor. But the more fun part about it was that we made it cross-curricular, which means I reached out to the art teacher, mm-hmm. and she had them actually rebuild the invention out of recyclables.
Oh.
Yeah, that was fun. That was really cool. So that was great because every other class had to have a different subject.
Okay.
And so we would, after we presented the second half of the day, we would actually go visit other classrooms and see what they were presenting on. So some classes presented on HBCUs. Some people made it like kind of mixed it with like Women's History Month so mm-hmm. that we could like flow into it. But they talked about like a prominent woman in Black history and compared them to a prominent woman in their life. So that was all really dope. Oh, pre-K. Oh, they're so cute. They talked about, they didn't do a lot of talking, but they presented about like food. So it was cool that like we had all these different aspects of Black history, but it also like took away from, I mean, you can't teach Black history in a month, but it's like, because we focus on inventors and inventions, we didn't like focus on the importance of HBCUs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like, I like the autonomy because then people, if I really feel strong about something or I know something very well, I'm able to give that like quality information to my students. But if I don't, it just feels like there's not like enough time to do all of it, which is why we do it every day,
right?
Being Black, but
right.
The intentionality behind Black History Month sometimes goes a little left.
You know, now that we've been talking about this, I wonder why there hasn't been a push for there to be some type of like universal curriculum that mm-hmm. kind of is mandated to be taught, because we know that in textbooks that we are rarely ever mentioned. And then when we are mentioned, there's only this context of slavery. It doesn't mm-hmm. really go into, we're not going into details about really knowing like who our true descendants are, like mm-hmm. knowing that we were kings and queens and those types of things. Like those aren't things that are highlighted. And even if and when they were, I remember actually in sixth grade, like the first time that I...
You remember sixth grade?
Sixth grade, Lord ancient Jesus. Modernized, like ancient modernized history or something like that it was called. And we talked about Egypt and...
Wait, I talked about Egypt in sixth grade too. Oh, we went to look out for you.
Yeah.
All right, carry on.
But whatever the case, like I remember our teacher, she literally brought different things in to kind of, so like papyrus paper and like different food that Egyptians would eat and things of that nature. And like, I wonder if we could be a lot more intentional with the curriculum that would be a little more robust. And so like in February, or not even just in February, it could be like a year long mm-hmm. type of immersion so that kids are constantly learning Black history. Because it's not a month type of conversation.
It's not. And I just feel like a lot of the way that I would like to do it and the way that I did it this month with my current kids is, well, I took a very ambiguous and general topic. It was just sharing our stories, which I got from the Target event that we went to.
Oh, wow.
And you're wearing the shirt right now. that was really cool. So I took it to the classroom, and the idea is that they're going to share their own story so that they understand that they are part of history, and they talk about like their family and things that led them to be where they are. But the way that I tied that in, because I was like, how can I talk about any and everything that I want to talk about in Black history and it be aligned with the project? So I'm like, oh, we could talk about we've just been talking about a prominent person almost every day and sharing their story. So they're not getting like robust information about each person, but they're getting little tidbits. And honestly, like, we got to do what we're going to remember.
Right. Exactly.
So we talked about Shirley Chisholm. Dope.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't think I learned about her until lasting years, honestly.
Yeah.
Who else did we talk about? Oh, we talked about Queen Nefertiti. Like we started, yes. That's another piece about it. Is like Black history, I kept trying to tell them Black history does not start with slavery. And exactly. And they were like, somebody was like, really, it doesn't? And I'm like, oh, that hurt my heart.
Right.
And sometimes I get mad because I'm like, y'all are so ignorant, right? But then I'm like, I was also ignorant. So who am I to be upset? And I'm not really upset with them. I'm just upset that like this hasn't been important enough that like my sixth grade students are telling me Black history started with slavery. So when I started talking about Africa and I talk within like within what I know, right? Mm-hmm. But the first thing I do, my main goal with talking about Africa is that kids understand that Africa is not a country. And that is a continent.
Right.
And so we actually learn all of the countries. I don't know how many they remember, but they be remembering some.
Right.
Right? They be talking about it. But that's like the first initial concept that I wish that all schools would do. Mm-hmm. Right? Because Martin Luther King is really cool. He's great. I'm not taking away from him. I'm not taking away from Rosa Parks. But we also don't even tell the full stories with those people.
No, we do not. And knowing about the whole Rosa Parks, like knowing that whole story in itself.
Right. Exactly. We never talk about that. And then it's like you could tell that there's people we intentionally don't talk about. Like we don't intentionally talk about Malcolm X.
Right.
It doesn't make sense that I'm from the Bay Area. And nobody talked to me about Huey P. Newton. That doesn't make sense. Like it's all like systematic and intentional.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like to me. Or it's a level of ignorance because I went to school with white people.
No, I do think that I think that people are extremely intentional about, because I didn't learn about Stokely Carmichael, I want to say, until I got to either high school or college. And it's like, I wonder if like, had I been exposed, like how much more of a, I don't even want to say a radical thinker, but I guess to a degree it is. Like, how much more creative would I have been, you know? Because it's just like a different perspective. But because you're taught about all of these white influential figures, but for so long when you don't know how to identify as them because you're not them, it's like, well, you're teaching me about this history that has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
And then we wonder why we don't do well in these types of subjects. It's because like we're learning about shit that isn't us.
That's
not a part of us. And so like I do wonder, like, have we learned about like the Huey P. Newton? Have we learned about Stokely Carmichael? Have we learned about Malcolm X? And been having literally critical like conversations about these people,
right?
And about the way that they thought. I wonder how I would be thinking now, or where I would be now.
And we put this because we've learned about history through a certain lens, a certain Eurocentric lens. It's like I put this subconscious barrier on myself on what I believe I can do or what power I think I have because I have not seen people that look like me have power.
Right.
Like I haven't seen them do things, but I haven't seen them have power. And then it's like, I mean, it is amazing that the things that Black people are doing now, like where we started and where we transitioned to and where we are now. But I wish that I was in a space where I wasn't surprised still to hear about certain Black people doing certain things.
Right.
But then that's hard because we are still in a day and age where we can still have the first Black person of insert here.
Yep.
Like I learned that at that Target event that, you know, the Smithsonian museums, bunch of museums, in DC, there's a secretary of
Dr. Lonnie Bunch.
Exactly.
Yes.
He's the first Black secretary, and they've had 13 since inception. And he was the first Black secretary, and he's still the secretary now.
Yep.
And it's like, dang. Like, so I'm proud, I'm surprised, but I wish that like Black history being taught in schools was just more important, more robust.
Right.
For everybody too, because people that are not Black really need to learn about Black history because y'all walking around here not knowing that we created stuff.
And
okay.
And you know, I will say, and I think that that's been actually one of the benefits about living out here, I will say, is like I love how rich of a community there is. Like living in PG County, like that was one of the best experiences I feel like I've ever had. Like to know that my pharmacist is Black. To know that, like, literally everywhere you go, there are so many Black, beautiful people.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, but I used to literally live off of Morgan A. Boulevard. And for the longest time, I didn't do the research, but Garaday Morgan was the person who invented the traffic light, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh!
And so, like, just, and that's the reason why that's named after him. And it's like, being able, and but people will literally jump on the metro and not even really know that Morgan Boulevard, like, there's a reason why this is called Morgan Boulevard. Mm-hmm. Like, it's bigger than just it being Morgan Boulevard.
And the train system, that type of system, I cannot remember his name. Shame on me. But the train system, the electric train system, was built by Black men.
Wow.
So, like, D.C., we using, it's a metropolitan area, we using the metro, and just that type of system, the idea, was brought on by a Black man. Now, if you look into it, they will say that there was a white man that actually had the idea because he used it. He tried to, I can't remember who the white man was, but tried to, basically Columbus the idea.
Mm-hmm.
But the Black man actually won the court case to have the patent under his name.
Yes.
So like Black history is literally everywhere and like we don't know. And going on back to like non-Black people. Well, Jahia, how do you feel about people that are not Black? Teaching Black History Month because, you know, our education system is predominantly white women.
Yeah.
Speak on that.
So it's, A, Black history has to be taught. And unfortunately, the overwhelming majority, like you said, of educators in the United States of America are white women. And so, like, this is why I think, like, yes, they need to do it. But I do think that they need a guide. Like, they need to know what they need to be teaching.
Yes, they
and
do.
And I just, and this is the reason why white people have to do a better job of being allies, because it's essential that they should have been asking for this resource a long time ago. Like, for Black history to have been, for Black History Month to have been something that was enacted in the late 70s, and we're still, it's 2020, and there's no universalized curriculum that says, like, okay, like, this is what, these are the standards that should be taught about Black history. Like, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And why are we the ones who are just now getting to 2020 and thinking like, oh, okay, like, this is something that we should have had a long time ago.
And a lot of it is not, I mean, there's a portion of it is like, you need to teach our history. But a portion of it is like two sets of notes. You see it through, you teach us through this white lens.
Exactly.
But you can really just teach us the same thing through the Black lens. And we would still learn the same, whatever, I don't know history standards, but we would still learn the same standards through
right.
that.
Like, exactly.
That's what I'm saying. I just also think that, I just don't know what people that are not Black are really teaching about Black history. That's the thing, because, and that's why I mentioned something earlier about the autonomy that teachers have in terms of actually teaching students about Black history. Is like, it's good because the people that actually know the history, like, if I'm passionate about inventions, right?
Right.
Last year I was passionate about it because I did a project surrounded around Black entrepreneurship with my students. And so that was just a good, like, segue into the project. So I'm like, oh, I know about this. I can do this. Like, I have a purpose with it.
Right, exactly.
And so when you're not Black, it's like your purpose is either you don't have one or it's just totally different or it was given to you.
Right.
And so you don't really, you can't deliver content with a purpose or lack of purpose or lack of passion. Now, I remember at that first school that we had, that we were at.
I am so dead. Oh, my goodness.
Woo, that's funny. Woo, okay. We want to talk about that. That's a whole nother episode. We're gonna get to our past school and our past experience.
Yes.
We just don't want to leave y'all. We don't want to lead y'all astray.
Exactly.
Giving you tidbits of it. But anyways, I remember our first school that we were at, I remember there was like a committee and they gave us stuff that we needed to teach. And I remember we were centered around like Sankofa. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Bringing in like the African traditions into our Black History Month. Like, that was cool. It was nice. And but like now I think it's a culture committee, like the person who, like, it's not all Black people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're also they didn't take the route of let's centralize what we're telling them. It's like, no, let's just organize that everybody can do their own piece. So there's just pros and cons in it.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, to a degree, I am like, what is the standard, right? Like, what what needs to be taught? Like, what should we be teaching? And I think that that is kind of like the question, because I think that we don't, I think that it just needs to be a perfect balance. Like, it's not a problem to learn about Malcolm X. And I know that that's something that we did teach our first year. We taught about Malcolm X. We talked, we spoke about figures who weren't the stereotypical, because I think we even talked about Shirley Chisholm, if I'm not mistaken.
I think we did too.
We highlighted a different figure. I want to say either, I want to say every day or every couple of days or something. But it was, I like that frame because of the fact that, like, everywhere you go in our school, we had a picture, or I think it was like in the multi-purpose room or something like that. We had a picture of that figure. Mm-hmm. So, like, and all kids were introduced to that person on the same day. So, like, throughout the day when they would walk around the school building, they'd see that picture. Mm-hmm. And even if it was just for that month, it still was like, okay, like, inputting that person into their brain, like, oh, okay, like, this person looks like me.
It's brand new.
I can be that person. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what's so important. Like, identity is such, it's such a beautiful thing. And I think that when you see someone that you can identify with, like, that literally becomes your goal. That's literally who you aspire to become.
You have to see it to be it.
Literally.
You have to see it to be it. It's very difficult when you haven't seen it. For sure.
Yeah.
If you listened to our last episode, we did ask people to reach out to us to share their experiences in school with Black History Month. And so we're about to share some of those experiences that we received and then put our own little twist on it, give you our experience. So one common theme was, I don't remember.
Yeah.
I was like, dang.
That makes sense though.
I don't remember either, sis. Like,
right. Because I definitely don't.
I don't. Like, I have a clear, I remember clearly being in clubs, maybe in high school where we did it, but it wasn't like a full school thing. Mm-mm. I know that I have one of our friends that actually did I had a conversation with Annie. Shout out to you. She has a unique experience because she's like, I didn't remember anything, and certainly not elementary school. She said high school, they had like one assembly, emphasize one. But she actually currently works at her alma mater, her high school.
That is so amazing.
That is. It is. Look at that.
Wow.
Okay. Reaching back to move forward.
Yes.
She said that they host step shows now and assemblies, and they have spirit weeks and forums and showcase other student talent. And so I thought that was great because it just exemplifies the progress that is being made.
Right.
She didn't say like it's like a perfect system now, but
right. She
is living proof that when this all earlier on, it was trash,
right,
or forgotten about. And now she's literally working in the same space and seeing all the progress. That must be a really good feeling.
That has to be an amazing feeling, because I feel like that was one of the reasons why I wanted to become a teacher also, so that I can go back and serve the community that I was a product of. And yeah, that hasn't happened yet.
That's beautiful. That hasn't happened
Shout
yet.
Shout out to Annie though. Shout
we
out to
we Annie. Know we gonna get there.
Right.
I think that I don't remember, but there's also what I'm noticing is that there's a difference between if you go to school with white teachers and you go to school with Black teachers. And so my friend Charmaine replied, and we was in the same school district, so we have predominantly white teachers. She remembers kind like MLK, learning about Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks, but doesn't really remember much else. I'm like, yeah, we on the same page. But we were both part of a busing program.
Mm.
So we are actually from East Palo Alto, and Palo Alto is adjacent to East Palo Alto. East Palo Alto is where all the Black people were, and it's more Hispanic people now, but where the Black people were. And then Palo Alto is like the affluent area. I went to high school right across the street from Stanford. But like, she was only one of two Black people in a class of like 30 of white people.
Wow.
And so like, I don't remember a lot of Black people at my elementary school, but that just goes to show what was important. Cause I clearly remember celebrating Chinese New Year.
Oh, wow.
There was a lot of Asians. I remember Chinese New Year. Like I could tell you some stuff.
Wow.
You're the dog over here. But with Black history, I don't have much memory of it.
I'm really trying to think back, because I was, and then because even in elementary school, I was actually very involved
Look at you.
Vice president and president of vice president of fourth grade, president.
You had presidents and vice presidents in elementary school?
Third grade, I lost to Victor Reyes for secretary.
Oh my God. Leave Victor alone.
No, but I think that we may have done a performance, and I wanted to ask you, so how do you feel about performances? Like, should Black History Month always be, because I feel like a lot of schools do that. Mm-hmm. Like, you are performing, and mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, is that something that we should always have to do?
You're saying, like, you outsource, like, a nonprofit?
Student performances. Like, should we be working towards doing, because I know that a past employer, that's something that they did. I saw that they had.
Oh, like, yeah. I think performances, I think they're fun and they're memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm thinking about, like, the learning for the student, like, the people that responded in these, well, did you remember it because that's what you guys had to do? Or did you remember it because it was a performance?
Right.
But, like, people in here, like, Val said that she learned about the Black National, Black National Anthem.
Yes.
My friend Siobhan, she actually went to a Black public charter school. Shout out to you, Siobhan. But she was talking about how her band played the Black National Anthem.
What?
And I'm like, oh, because, like, I remember learning the Black National Anthem, but I was, like, in a Black club in middle school, and they taught it to us. It's like, you need to know this, you know?
Right, right.
And so, like, I also think historically Black people have used music to show resiliency and to get through so much turmoil. So exactly. It makes sense. I mean, I don't think this is intentional. Like, the white schools, I don't think it's intentional.
Right.
I'm not really certain, but I think that it makes sense that we perform because we are performing type of people, you know? That's a good question, though. Because sometimes I do think it can be seen as a cop-out.
Yeah.
That's what you're getting at.
Yes.
Okay.
But the thing is, like, to that point, though, I feel like you brought up a good point, even, like, the Black National Anthem, because that was something that in high school, in a part of our BSU, I made it like a mandatory, like it was mandatory for us to sing the Black National Anthem before every meeting, because I did not feel as if enough people knew the Black National Anthem. Mm. And so, like, that was something that, and but it's because it's something that I don't feel like we discuss, like.
Mm-mm.
And I'm like, looking back, I kind of wish that I would have done that while I was in the classroom, like, kind of at least played the song. Or just because when you know it, or like if you have some type of connection to it, then you're able to like carry it on after. But I don't think that we really exposed our kids to that when I was teaching.
I didn't, and I'm about to.
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it. Because, like, and when you go to like Black spaces, like, yes. I go to Essence Music Festival 4th of July weekend almost every year with my mom. Shout out to my mom, who's my best friend.
Yes, go mom.
But like, there are Black things that happen, like Essence, there's thousands and thousands of Black people from a bunch of different spaces, and they could play the Black National Anthem and everybody would stop and sing. And so, like, that's something that connects us together.
Yeah.
And so if we're not singing it, we're not teaching kids how to do it, they're missing out on like a potential connection. And like, that's really powerful.
Yeah.
To, like, be able to go in these different spaces and sing.
And it should be just as powerful as us getting out there and breaking down the electric slide. Like, you know, we should know it like the back of our hand. And it's a beautiful song too. And like, actually like knowing the history behind it too. I feel like that's what's really important. And I think that when you make that connection, I feel like people really are like, oh, okay. I know I really want to sing it right now.
not that podcast. Another thing about presentations, Justin was telling me that he had a PE teacher who coordinated with like some of the Black students at a school, and they all delivered like short speeches at an assembly about HBCUs. You're thinking.
Yes, I'm thinking, because I'm like, I did some oratory.
We're digging it up. We're digging it up, baby. We're digging it up.
Yes, that's so amazing.
He said that he spoke on Grambling State, because his dad went to Grambling, right? And he also went to Howard. There's a connection there. But he was telling me that when he was just talking about before, he knew his dad went there, but it wasn't like, there wasn't as much meaning behind it in like HBCU. And he created meaning through this presentation. So they wore Grambling shirt, said some facts about it. I think he said that somebody did the poem, pretended the poem Still I Rise. But it was a good way to spread awareness of HBCUs and Black culture. And I think that if we think about, we talk about different types of learners,
right?
And most of our learners are visual. Mm-hmm. And you have the opportunity to learn something kinesthetically and auditorily, like rather than sitting down and learn about something. So I can see why performances would also still be important, because you're adhering to the needs of a bunch of different people.
That's very true. And I think even, and then this is something else. And I remember when my first year when I was teaching, we did a performance for the kids. All the Greeks got together and did a performance for them. And that was something that the kids really, truly did love. Mm-hmm. And
that's
then
lit.
They also got to see like their teachers in a different view, like to be able to connect with that, to know that, oh, okay, like not only can we teach, but we can dance and do a little something, okay. You know, like that's also a dope experience.
Oh, you part of a Greek organization, Jahad?
I am a part of a Greek organization.
What organization you part of?
Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated.
Oh, okay. So, all right. Shout out to teachers for continuing to make Black History Month come alive in schools, whether it's through representing your orgs or just sharing knowledge. You are all providing students with pieces to the puzzle of really truly understanding their Black identities. And a special thank you to the people who completed the Google form, yes, which is literally shared their Black History Month experiences with us. It was nice to hear them. It was nice to share and make our own connections with them. And we hope that other people are making connections with them too.
This week's call to action for you is to rate us on Apple Podcasts. We currently have about 10 ratings, and our goal is 50 by the next episode. So go ahead and rate away. Your ratings let us know how we're doing, so rate away.
Period.
Also, subscribe to our podcast. We do this because we're passionate about it. We want to say thank you so much to all our audience, as well as our guests. If you have something that you want to include in our podcast or just give us some feedback, feel free to reach us at our email address, which is thereformistpipeline@gmail.com. Once again, that's thereformistpipeline@gmail.com. And last but not least, please follow us on IG. You can find me at HADYHAD. You can find Lynn's
at MamaLynn22, spelled how it sounds, MamaLynn22.
Peace, love, and light.
Hootie hoo!